Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Missing Link for SLPs podcast. I'm Maddie, and you are listening to an episode in our podcast series, Oh, the Places You Will Go, an SLP Spotlight, where I get to interview speech pathologists who have interesting positions in our field, from the very basic to the most interesting spots, places, people they work with, and all of that in between. I get to have the fun of just chatting with these SLPs, finding out what they do, how they got their jobs, and any words of advice they have for other SLPs. So listen as we explore all the wonderful things an SLP can do. So welcome to this episode. I am here with Katie Scarlett, and we are Zooming. When we do these podcasts, we Zoom, so Katie and I can see each other and everything else. It just makes the turn-taking, I guess, better. And for those, I know this is a podcast, but I just have to explain, Katie is sitting here and her virtual background is a coffee shop. Just fun and friendly. She's got a big smile on her face. So welcome today, Katie. Happy to have you here.
Thank you, Maddie. I'm excited to be here. This is my first podcast. thank you for having me. Like you said, my name is Katie Scarlett. I am a speech language pathologist, and I work specifically with students that are deaf and hard of hearing. Currently, I work at a residential school for the deaf. I have a caseload of about 25 students. They are anywhere from kindergarten through eighth grade. My setting as a total, we do have a parent-infant program, an early childhood education program. They have an elementary and middle school. And then in a separate building, we house our high school students, which come from all over the country. They do live there. They have dorms on campus. And they go home about every 6 weeks or so to visit their families for what we call extended weekends.
And what age do you work with again that they stay in the dorms?
That is high school. So that starts at ninth grade all the way up until they can actually do a double year as a senior. But they stay up until their 21st birthday. So anywhere between 15, 16, all the way till 21.
One of the reasons why I asked you on today is because you work in a field I have no experience with. And I did not know they had programs like where you work. So that's super cool. Our listeners, one of the reasons why I do this podcast, I think I explained this earlier before we hit the record button, is I really want students, either when they're going through grad school or when they're starting to get out into the clinical fellows, to really look over the horizon and see everything. I'm a big zip liner, so you climb to the top and you look over all the trees, you get ready to hang onto that zip line. And that's what these podcasts are. They're like, look at all the things you can do. So I'm so excited to have you tell us about the community, the population, the students that you work with. I'm already learning something from you. So great. Tell us more.
So in my particular setting, well, let's start from the beginning. So how I got started, I always wanted to help people. So that was one of the reasons why I became an SLP. I know it sounds cliche, but I really do enjoy helping people. I have a big heart. I have a big faith, and my faith really plays a part into helping people. So speech language pathology was one of the careers that I did explore while going to college. At first, I did think about going into physical therapy. I am a dancer, so that was one of the reasons why. Right when I was going in, though, they had just changed it to a doctorate degree. So it was additional years of schooling that I wasn't really prepared for at that time. I did hear about occupational therapy, but still wasn't really quite sure what that was. I didn't really understand it as fully as I do now. And then when I stumbled upon speech, I just saw the versatility in the field. You could work anywhere from, you know, in the NICU with babies all the way up until geriatrics. So it went from like 9 days old till 99 years old. And you had so many different types of settings to work in, whether it's a private practice, school, university setting, hospital, nursing home, home health care, owning your own business as a private practice, sole practitioner, I was just stunned and really wild, public school setting. I was just really wild at everything that you could do with that field. So that was one of the reasons why I did choose becoming an SLP to help people and just the versatility within the field. I did have some experience with sign language when I was in high school. I was a part of a small group and we just learned, you know, some basic signs. Back then, I don't really think Google was a thing. Maybe Axe Jeeves was around. So I would go to the library and I would go in the section where it was American Sign Language. I would look through all these books about ASL and deaf culture and deaf community. And that's really where a lot of my passion sparked from, just being interested in this particular setting. So I went to a community college and they had an ASL class as one of the foreign language requirements that you needed. So I decided to take it since I had some experience working or knowing ASL. So that class was so much fun. I fell in love. I had an amazing teacher, amazing classmates. She allowed us to go into the deaf community within our local area and just really find more interest with actually communicating with fluent signers. Of course, I'm like fresh out of, you know, a class, beginner. Hi, my name is Katie. Nice to meet you.
He's finger spelling and doing some basic sign here, guys, to me in the Zoom. You can't see it, but she's, it's in her heart.
No, it's like my passion just really was initiated right then and there. And I was like, okay, this is what I want to do. Mm-hmm. And even over time, I took the second course and I did have a break in between where I ended up going to a 4-year college. So I took ASL 1 and 2 in the community college. And then when I went to the 4-year university, there was a big gap. It was probably about a year. And, you know, if you don't use it, you lose it. So within mm-hmm. that year, I found speech pathology, began taking some courses, you know, the basic anatomy, physiology, language development, speech development, the neuro classes that we had to take. So I ended up taking ASL 3 as one of the elective requirements that was required in order for me to get like a specific amount of courses. I had to take these electives. So it was like ASL 1, 2, 3. And I was like, okay, I'll take ASL 3. And I took ASL 1 and 2 previously. And when I tell you, I was so lost in my ASL 3 class. These were students that have already taken it with this teacher previously, the semesters before. And I had a year in between and I was like, oh, I guess I didn't know sign as well as I thought I did. And the teacher really sat me aside and was like, do you think you can make it? Because, you know, the first week's dropper ad. And I was like, no, it's fine. I'll make it. Don't worry. I think I'll be fine. And luckily I did pass with an A. But with that being said.
Wow. Impressive.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, but that being said, though, I did get heavily involved in the community sure. at that college. I was in the ASL club. I worked, I worked as like the treasurer. So we had different officer positions and we had different events that some of the officers had to show up to and help organize. So I remember going to these events, helping organize them. It was silent dinners. We had, you know, deaf happy hour events. We even had like a silent bowling. We got very involved all together within the community. And that's really what helped me pass the class and become more fluent in ASL. And there was a deaf convention that year. It was in Orlando. And I went to one of the booths that were there for a summer camp out in Dundee, Florida. And I was at the time getting into grad school applications and needed something to kind of beef up my resume. So I was like, let me know if you need any volunteers. I'm looking for volunteer hours. And the woman at the booth was like, oh, I know somewhere you can get plenty of service hours. And I was like, really? She's like, yeah, there's a camp. It's in Dundee, Florida. That's about maybe a good hour outside of Orlando. As soon as you hit cows, you've hit Dundee. Nothing out there. Middle of nowhere. But I got accepted as a camp counselor. And this was back in 2012. And I remember my sister at the time had dropped me off. We had one car that we were sharing in college. She dropped me off at camp and I stayed there for 2 weeks. Didn't know anyone. And from that experience, I was put in the elementary cabin with these students that were the cutest little things, and their fingers were signing everywhere. And I really just kind of dove right in, and everything really just kind of picked up from there. And I just loved it, loved it. And this is a bigger, like, acres and acres of land. So it had horseback riding, canoeing, archery. We had little dances. We actually went to Legoland. Like, we had lots of events going on. That was actually one of the first times I rode a horse. First time I learned how to set up a tent, which I was reading the instructions, and the kids are over here because they're so visual, putting the thing together. And I'm like, hold on, wait, this is the part. And they knew exactly what to do. The first time I swam in a lake before. I'm usually used to the beaches here in South Florida, so that was one of the first times in Central Florida. We do have a lot of lakes. Yeah, so no crocodiles, though. If there were, there was probably just like a few more. Yeah, I learned how to canoe. I was like, it's great. I learned how to make taco bags, which is basically potatoes. And
yeah.
It was great. Banana boats, which was like banana kind of open with chocolate and marshmallows, all this, you know, fattening stuff. Put it in foil and grill it on the fire. Oh, I learned how to make a fire. I didn't know you had to learn how to feed a fire. And I was like, yeah, I keep giving it, and they're like, oxygen. And I was like, oh, goodness. I was like, but all that being said, you know, even the camp experience was so amazing, even more because of the ASL component to it. You know,
sure.
I think a lot of people don't really get that it is truly a language. It is a culture. It is a community. And, you know, some of my family members or even my close friends don't really understand quite the ASL aspect. And I think that's the hardest part, because it's like they see that I know sign language and I work with deaf students. They automatically think, oh, you, what am I saying? And they're doing, you know, inappropriate hand movements. And I'm like, you know, this is really a culture and a language all in itself. And they're like, oh, so, you know, that's an education moment as well, an opportunity to educate and further the gap between hearing and deaf, because I've experienced a lot of that as well. My camp, especially just all the wonderful experiences, it still had, you know, hearing versus deaf. And that's something that is still a big thing in the community. But either way, you know, I still love it regardless of all its flaws. So even just having educational opportunities to educate people and show them, no, this is ASL, this is a community, this is deaf community, deaf culture, like in itself. And I think when you go to a camp for 2 weeks and you're in pure silence, but yet there's so much conversation happening. There's so much language going on, so much communication.
Yes.
But you as a hearing person, as myself as a hearing person, you know, we really have to focus on our eyes more visually. And I'm like, you know, I remember the first time I really got ASL, and it was a joke someone made, and I just bust out laughing. Like, it was like, and it wouldn't have probably been funny in spoken English, but it was nice to know, like, ASL has its own language, its own community. Like, we can all laugh and joke and have those experiences together. But, you know, as hearing people, they just hear silence, you know? So anyways, that was a long story, but just to say, you know, that really ignited my passion going into that deaf summer camp. And ever since that experience in 2012, I had gone back every year since then, up until I had gone to grad school, because they required we took a summer course. So I wasn't able to go at that point. But ever since then, I kept going back and going back and going back. Probably my third or fourth year, I was an assistant camp counselor. So I oversaw all the different cabins from elementary, middle, and high school for the girls' cabinet, the girls' cabins. And even now, some of the little kids in my first year, you know, they were like 3 feet tall, are now going to my school with the residential high school. So they're from Florida. They come there to the residential school for the deaf. And when they're there, I'm like, oh my gosh, I remember when you were little. I have pictures when, you know, we were super, you know, younger. And I was like, wow, like they're all mature and they're just, they've grown into themselves. I remember talking to one recently, well, you know, pre-pandemic, it was during homecoming week. And I was like, you've really grown to be such a beautiful young lady. Nice. And she was just applying to go to grad, to go to her undergrad college. And I was like, wow. And I had a picture. I'm like, remember when you were younger? I remember them just crying in the cabin for their parents. They wouldn't go to sleep. Bedtime was 9 o'clock. They were testing us, of course. And back then I was probably like 22, 23. So I was just like, they walked all over me. But I loved every minute of that. And that experience really solidified the fact that I want to work with deaf and hard of hearing kids. And I never let it go from there. So anyway, with that being said, how I got started in the field now, I went to UCF, University of Central Florida, go Knights, and I attended a college fair. I graduated in 2013. Yeah. May of 2013. And I had went to the College of Education. They're having like this big fair, where all these different recruiters were coming from all over the state. And I remember going there, and one of the local school districts here in South Florida was actually up there. And I told them what my major was, communication sciences and disorders. And they were like, oh, you're an SLP? Oh, okay. Yeah. Give us your information here. Write it down. Write it down. It wasn't even like the regular like list of names and emails. He gave me like a separate paper. I guess he was going to keep special for himself. He's like, write your name right here. Yeah. We need you guys. There is a critical shortage. I was like, oh. Like, there's a critical. I said, but I just have my bachelor's degree. I'm not my master's. He said, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. You can work for 2 years in the state of Florida. You can work for 2 years with a bachelor's degree. You do have to get accepted into a graduate school program within those 2 years. And I've completed it within 4 years. Unless they've changed the rules since then. But when I was going, this is back in 2013, it was like a temporary teaching certificate kind of that we have in the state of Florida. But anyways, I was excited that I could get a job with my bachelor's degree because I thought you had to have a master's. So, you know, shortly after that, I got a call. They said, hey, come up for an email. So I graduated, moved back home, went in for the interview. And that same day, I was hired on the spot.
Wow. Well, you clearly have the passion. I'm sure you have the skill. People watching could, if they could watch, could see that. And neat. Excellent. You are like so easy to interview because I can ask you one question and then 10 minutes later, we have this beautiful, wonderful story. It's excellent. So you got your graduate degree. You've immersed yourself in the community of deaf and hard of hearing. Now what?
Oh, so now I graduated. I had the experience working with deaf and hard of hearing students. Oh, so after I graduated with my undergrad with the bachelor's degree, they saw the passion I had for deaf students. They immediately put me at the central school that housed deaf and hard of hearing students, a middle school. So they came from all over the county for that mainstream program. And I worked there for about a year and a half and went to grad school. And even in that experience in itself, I still had the passion for deaf and hard of hearing. And I did kind of doubt myself, though. I will admit, at one point we were learning about swallowing and voice. And I was like, oh, this is exciting. I want to learn more about this, you know. And in grad school, yeah, that's your world, exactly. And even having that just little taste of that experience in the class and in my graduate internships, I really do like that setting. So I do work PRN for a contract company. One of the regional directors just called me the other day. He's like, are you back yet? And I was like, no, not yet. He's like, okay, we have some hours for you. Someone's going out for July 4th weekend. And I was like, I'm not going to be back in time, but thank you for considering me. So I do like that setting as well, but I did kind of doubt myself as far as where my passion really lied in grad school. And I think for, you know, future SLPs that are listening in, you don't have to have it all figured out. You know, I obviously have a passion for deaf and hard of hearing. I clearly love working with deaf students. I love my experience at my summer camp. I love the experience working in my first job out of college with my bachelor's degree. I loved having that experience, but while you're certainly in grad school, take advantage. You know, you don't have to be a master of all trades, but it's important to at least experience, you know, those things that you have the opportunity to. Because although I knew, like, I wanted to work with deaf, I love working with deaf, you know, I went to a graduate internship that was all medical-based swallowing, and we're doing MBSs all day. I just was able to immerse myself in that setting as well. And, you know, it did pay off in the long run now that I am an SLP and having, you know, opportunity to work PRN on the side and being, you know, efficient at it as well. I feel like it's important to know that you don't have to have it all figured out. I think a lot of SLPs in grad school are like, oh my gosh, I know I want to work with autism. And that's great and all, you know, but I think it's important to at least enjoy those experiences because that's what school's about. You are a lifetime learner. You never stop learning. Right. I'm taking grad school classes right now. You never stop learning. So anyways, now that I currently work in the setting that I am in now, I will say in my graduate program, we didn't really have a lot of opportunities to work with a setting that worked with deaf and hard of hearing students that did know sign language. It was more so the spoken language. So a lot of people don't know, but my school does focus on spoken language as well. It's not just ASL. As a professional in the setting, I give parents the opportunity to understand every aspect. It's not my job to choose, oh no, they shouldn't sign. Oh yes, they should sign. As an SLP myself, as a professional, you give the child the best opportunity possible. And that's what the parent chooses for that child. So there are some schools out there that don't use sign language. It's all listening and spoken language skills. And that's absolutely fine if that's what the family chooses to use. So my program didn't have anything that specialized in deaf and hard of hearing that signed. There were some local schools that did use listening and spoken language skills for those students. So they have usually hearing aids or cochlear implants or BAHAs, whatever their audiological device is. They use whatever residual hearing to listen and understand their language and be able to produce in spoken English. My passion was for deaf and hard of hearing culture and sign language. So I reached out to my contacts at my current opportunity that I'm at now with my job and said, hey, I'm a grad student from Florida and this is where my passion is. Would you be willing to take me? And they interviewed me just like how we're on Zoom or Skype back then. And they accepted me as an intern. And that was my fourth semester. So we went full-time last semester into grad school. There were no classes, just full-time graduate school experience. So that really helped prepare me. And the beautiful part of that story is where I did the internship at is where I currently work at now. And I love what I do. So just to go on what a typical day may look like, I report to work at 8:15 is our time we have to report to work. Usually make coffee when I get in, have my breakfast, usually a boiled egg or a waffle with some peanut butter. And then after that, I attend a morning meeting. That's usually the psychologist or the school counselors. They just talk about what the plans are for the day or the week. If they have a field trip or this is happening or they have a guest speaker showing up. So the morning meeting happens. That usually lasts about 10 minutes or so, sometimes longer if there's a birthday and we're saying happy birthday to a student. Or there's a new student that is, you know, at school and we're welcoming them. And then after that, there's morning recess. So each morning they do start off with a morning recess to get the students' minds active and going. Some people like to jog in the morning. That gets their mind moving for the day. So there's research that supports, you know, active hands, active mind. So they get the students active going in the morning with recess. And they're usually different activities. Sometimes they're in the gym, shooting basketball hoops. Sometimes they're outside playing kickball. Sometimes they're in the cafeteria playing board games. There's all different types. We also have a school garden. So one lady kind of oversees that and the kids go and, you know, dig dirt in the garden and stuff. After that, my day in the morning for me is typically the first hour and a half dedicated to just therapy preparation, returning any emails, voice messages. Sometimes I consult with teachers. I do block out time in the morning for evaluations. So I want to make sure that the students are there. So I usually check in, make sure everyone's there at the morning meeting. Sometimes I hand out reminder passes for the students so they know, oh, today's Tuesday. Yes. Oh, it's Friday. Yes. Okay. What time do you have speech? Okay, good. I'm going to see you after lunch at 1 o'clock. Okay. After lunch, I'll see you. So
she sent me again, you guys.
Just a little reminder so they know. Oh, okay. And then from about that hour and a half after the morning recess time, I usually eat lunch. And there may be one or two groups before that. But after lunch, it's back to back to back to back. I'm doing pull-out therapy. I'm pushing into the classroom. There's a lot of therapy that happens right afterwards. And I have to make sure I'm prepared in the morning. Usually I have my things out for the week and the kids are great at letting me know what they like to do. So sometimes we make slime. There's sometimes cooking activities, but we only do that once a month. There are a lot of different activities that they choose to do, like headbands or different games that we have readily available because my department does have federal dollars that are funded. So we do get a lot of, you know, materials for the students, which is nice. And then after I do my therapy, I have documentation. So usually the students are dismissed at 3 o'clock. School goes out at 3:15, but they have to get to the buses and the younger ones have to use the bathroom and stuff. So anyway, after dismissal, I'm usually doing my documentation, SOAP notes, completing them. There are rare days, usually with after school events. So sometimes there's IEP meetings, department meetings, school-wide meetings, lots and lots of meetings. But that usually is a calendar. So I know, okay, Tuesday, Wednesday, I have an IEP meeting. Next week, Wednesday, there's a school-wide meeting. And then I'm off by 3:45. That's the time I leave. So from 8:15 to 3:45. So it is a nice schedule. So it's nice to go home around 4:30, maybe take a nap, relax a bit. So I do love the schedule, especially with
nice.
Yeah, it's very nice. I think that's probably one of the pros about the setting, working at a school, is the schedule. And also just, you know, summer's off, having those winter break, spring break, holidays off. For me, it personally works. I mean, I'm single, I have no kids, but I do love to travel. So just having that kind of built-in schedule is something that I enjoy doing.
Excellent. It's fun hearing the passion in your voice and hearing. We have another series that I'm starting called SLP Stories, and I would love to have you back on and tell some of the stories in your workplace where you've notice where somebody has had trouble communicating and you've seen them grow, or a particularly poignant memory that you have where you're like, yes, this is why I do speech pathology. This is why I work in this community. Look, your smile is just huge.
When I have so many stories.
Well, we'll have you back on for another. It's going to be another wonderful series. I've got some speakers lined up for that. And we're just going to talk stories and share stories about why we do what we do. Before we wrap up this episode, what words of advice do you have for a speech pathologist who has listened to you today, either a student or a newbie, who's like, oh, I want to do what Katie does? What words of advice do you have to get into what you do?
One advice I can think of is really don't be afraid to ask. Had I not asked about this opportunity at my current job setting, I would have never been granted the opportunity. Do your research, do your networking, you know, take as much opportunities as you can. Maddie, you have my information. So if anyone has any questions that they want answered or just any curious follow-up to anything I've talked about today, feel free to reach out to me. I also feel like for students who want to go into my particular setting, just some words of advice would really be to get into the community. I think it's important to really build that rapport. So there are Hands and Voices Everywhere, which is a nonprofit organization for parents and families of children that are deaf and hard of hearing. So there are chapters all over. So like I was involved with the Florida Hands and Voices in grad school, and I did some note-taking minutes for their meeting. Get involved in your local ASL club. If your school doesn't have one, start one. Also, I would even reach out to volunteering. Since my graduate program didn't have a lot of programs that we're working with deaf and hard of hearing that sign, I reached out to the Florida School for Deaf and Blind in St. Augustine. And I drove down there one day and asked them, like, can I come and observe? And they're like, sure, you're welcome to. So even just being a fly on the wall and observing those experiences, not afraid to ask for opportunities, you miss 100% of the opportunities that you don't ask for. 100%. So nothing ventured, nothing gained. I remember I was in grad school when I heard that the very first time it was a client, it was an older gentleman, and he was talking about his air fryer. And I was like, what is an air fryer? And he had a stroke. He had had a stroke, and he was doing something new that my my supervisor and my internship, and he was like, you know, not sure about it. And she's like, okay, well, are you willing to try it? After she explained what they were doing. And he said, nothing ventured, nothing gained. So that would be my advice. Go out, go out, go out. Look for those opportunities. Look for those chances for you to really take opportunities and really embrace those experiences. Because, you know, had I not gone to that ASL 3 class and the teacher set me outside and said, do you think you can make it? I was like, no, I'm fine. I'm fine. And of course, in the back of my head, I'm like, I don't know if I'm going to make it. I don't know if I'm going to make it. Like, we're in class and everyone's signing. And it's like, I haven't taken ASL in a year almost. What are you guys signing with? What are you saying? And, you know, voices have to be off. So I'm like struggling. But, you know, having that opportunity to just like dive right in. Okay, ASL club, you need help? Oh, okay, I can be an officer. I'll do the treasury. Okay, although I ran for vice president, but it's fine. I was able to still go on all the different events. I found my deaf camp that way, went to Dundee, Florida, back to back to back. You know, I feel like if you want this setting and this is something that you feel is a passion for you, especially working with students that are deaf, whether it is with American Sign Language or it is with auditory verbal therapy or listening spoken language, I think you should get those opportunities. You know, the Clark schools are out there. There's tons of Clark schools that would love to have volunteers. The NISHLA, I'm sure your university has one, Maddie. Maddie, I believe, teaches at a university. So
St. Cloud State. Woohoo, go Huskies.
Awesome. So yeah, get involved with your local NISHLA chapter. So I would just say that's one of my advice. Also, just getting into the field once you find your niche, whatever that may be, one word of advice I'd really just want everyone to remember is their why. What is their why? What drives you in the morning? What gets you up? Because after a while, you don't want that fire to burn out. Because there have been lots and lots of times, and that can be another story for another day, Maddie, but there have been lots and lots of times where I lost track of my why. There's a lot of noise around you. There's a lot of doubts and fears, especially going into graduate school and finishing graduate school even. I personally suffered from imposter syndrome in my CFY, not thinking I was good enough, not thinking I deserved it. And if anyone doesn't know what imposter syndrome is, I highly recommend you just Google it. And I was like, oh, that's me.
That was one of our earlier podcasts, was struggling with the imposter syndrome.
Oh, wow. There's another. Yeah, that's great.
Well, listen to that episode.
I'll definitely have to go back and look at that. But yeah, dealing with the imposter syndrome and even just getting out into the field once I graduated, because if you're listening to this podcast right now, and you are someone that's, you know, about a semester or two before you graduate and you take your praxis and you have your CFY year and you get your C's, I feel like it's important just to remember your why, because all that work you did in grad school, that was the hardest part. Now it's time to put those applications and those theories, yes, and apply them into your setting. Apply them.
Yes, well said.
Mm-hmm. Apply them with the students. And for your setting too, Maddie, especially because of, you know, you meet one person with dysphagia. You just met one person with dysphagia. You don't have, you know, textbook patients that you work with. Everyone's different. So I think it's important that you really apply what you've learned into your setting that you work in now. And the theory is great. Grad school, you know, learn as much as you can. But when you get into the field, remember your why. Remember why you did this and what drives you in the morning, whether it's a vision board you need to put up, whether it's a post-it that you have on your mirror in the morning and you write down that I'm doing this because. and you put your statement down. Mm-hmm. Why is it important to you? So anyway, those are my 2 cents. Remember your why.
Excellent. 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 So we will include your information in the show notes. And little insight into our world here. I met Katie through her sister, Carlene, who is my social media manager, and her company is Social Blessings. So you're going to, Katie and Carlene, fantastic. It is about networking. It's about who you know. I met Carlene at Asha. So find all of that information in the show notes. If somebody else wants to be a podcast or website, reach out. We'll give you Carlene's information as well. But yeah, thank you for your time today. This was great.
Oh, it was wonderful. Thank you for having me. And it's such a small world because, yeah, my sister attended Asha and mm-hmm. socialblessingsllc.com, social media marketing management company. Yep. And just meeting you, Maddie, and she always comes to me and she's like, hey, what does this mean? Hey, what does that mean? And I'm like, oh, like, yeah, you're working with an SLP. So it's just a small world and networking is important. It's not really about who you know. It's who knows you. It's really important who knows you.
That's right. That's been one of the little things about if you, I know this is like totally not deaf and hard of hearing, but if you have any inclination on doing anything with pulling somebody on with websites, social media, find somebody who will take the time to learn what you're doing. And that's what Carlene's done. She knows who I am, what I do, and what my mission is.
Yeah, she's great. Anything that she doesn't know about, she will look it up. And she asks me and all my other SLP friends. So if anyone out there is looking for any help with their social media marketing, I recommend socialblessingsllc.com.
There we go. Well, thanks for your time today. I hope today's conversation has created some aha moments for you and motivated you to become a better SLP, continuing to connect some of those missing links between what you know and how to use that knowledge. Thank you for downloading the Missing Link for SLP's podcast. And if you enjoyed the show, I'd love you to subscribe, rate it, and leave a short review. Also, please share an episode with a friend. Together, we can raise awareness and help more SLPs find and connect those missing links and get the information needed to help them feel confident in their patient care every step of the way. Follow me on Instagram and join the Fresh SLP community on Facebook. Show notes are always available, so come learn more at freshslp.com. Let's make those connections. You got this.